Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I guess we got the closing theme there. You were supposed to hear a little announcement. Anyway, I'll give it to you. You are listening to bbsradio.com, and we'd like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on blogtalkradio.com. Got a very interesting guest tonight, and we're going to talk about some very important issues because, as we often describe on this show, we are currently engaged in what we could rightfully call spiritual warfare. You could say it's the powers of good versus the powers of evil, and that could be tweaked a little bit if I had my own gumption to do so, but that would take at least a half an hour to go into that. We're going to be talking tonight about consciousness, and I have two short clips that I would like to play. The first one you may have heard if you listen to the show on a regular basis comes all the way from Washington, D.C., and I think it's representative of the level of consciousness that we have in what's called our leadership. And this clip features the Democratic representative from the state of Georgia, Hank Johnson, and I'll let him do the talking for you.
Now, this is a island that at its widest level is, 12 miles from shore to shore, and at its smallest level location, it's 7 miles between one shore and the other. Is that correct?
I don't have the exact dimensions, but to your point, sir, I think Guam is a small island.
Very small island, and about 24 miles, if I recall, long. So 24 miles long, about 7 miles wide at the least widest place on the island, and about 12 miles wide on the widest part of the island. And I don't know how many square miles that is. Do you happen to know?
I don't have that figure with me, sir. I can certainly supply it to you if you'd like.
Yeah, my fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
We don't anticipate that. The Guam population, I think, currently about 175,000, and again, with 8,000 Marines and their families, it's an addition of about 25,000 more into the population.
And also things like the environment, the sensitive areas of the environment, coral reefs and those kinds of things, and I know that, you know, lots of people don't like to think about that, but, you know, we didn't think about global warming either. And now we do have to think about it. And so I'm concerned from an environmental standpoint whether or not Guam is the best place to do this relocation, but it's actually the only place. Is that correct?
This is the best place. This is the farthest west U.S. territory that we own. And, this is part of our nation. And in readdressing the forward presence and posture importance to Pacific Command, Guam is vital to this decision.
Now, special thanks to Representative Hank Johnson for enlightening us on the dimensions and the size of the smallest location on Guam. If you can make sense of that, just to brighten up the mood, I want to play something which may explain why some of these people have achieved such a level of consciousness. And this short musical ditty is courtesy of the late Don Harkins, former publisher-editor of the Idaho Observer.
Many years ago when I was 23, I was married to a widow who was pretty as could be. This widow had a grown-up daughter who had hair of red. My father fell in love with her and soon they two were wed. This made my dad my son-in-law and changed my very life. For my daughter was my mother cause she was my father's wife. To complicate the matter, even though it brought me joy, I soon became the father of a bouncing baby boy. My little baby then became a brother-in-law to Dad, and so became my uncle, though it made me very sad. For if he was my uncle, then that also made him brother to the widow's grown-up daughter, who of course was my stepmother. I'm my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa. It's a funny, I know, but it really is so. Oh, I'm my own grandpa. My father's wife then had a son who kept him on the run. He became my grandchild cause he was my daughter's son. My wife is now my mother's mother and it makes me blue. Because although she is my wife, she's my grandmother too. If my wife is my grandmother, then I am her grandchild. And every time I think of it, it nearly drives me wild.
This has got to be the strangest thing I ever saw.
As husband of my grandmother, I am my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa.
I'm my own grandpa, and I think that explains why we have such a high level of consciousness working in government. Well, I had to do that to lighten up the mood a little bit. We have a very vibrant guest with us tonight. He hails originally from England, now lives in Canada, and he has worked as a forensic psychologist for some 12 years. And recently penned a book, which we're going to be talking about tonight. It's called The Heart Doctrine, Mystical Views of the Origin and Nature of Human Consciousness. And I think we've had both extremes in examples in those two clips that I played. I'd like to welcome the host of Zero Point, a show heard every other Saturday on bbsradio.com. My good friend, Christopher Holmes, Ph.D. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. It's an honor to be on your show. I'm a regular listener as often as I can, even though you're on here late.
Well, yes, and likewise. I listen. You're not on late. It's just that I'm doing so many things. I have to really coordinate my schedule to catch your show, but I've heard many of them.
You're on the cutting edge of research, and like you serve a profoundly important function, Don. I really appreciate your service, you know, in the truth community.
Well, thank you.
Guests.
Yeah, the success of my show is always based on the quality of guests I have, and I do have a lot of repeat guests, but they have a lot to say. They contribute a lot. And it's been a while since you've been on the show. I'm really happy to have you here with us tonight, especially because of this wonderful book that I've been reading that you authored very recently. And we want to talk about that. Now, I want to let you and the listeners know that I haven't posted this yet as an item on my book page because I haven't read it and I'm not qualified to do a complete review, but I can tell you it's going to be one heck of a review just on the basis of what I've read. And I have to say that I haven't found anything yet that troubles me or that I disagree with. And you're out there in the stratosphere of consciousness, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, Don. I feel in my own life, I feel really honored to have produced this book, and it really is a kind of a product of my 30 years of trying to understand the issues of human consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and that began when I was a graduate student in psychology, and all the theories of psychotherapy talked about how we have to kind of make people more conscious, or bring the unconscious into consciousness. So I became interested in the issue of consciousness and studied Western psychology and philosophies, and then that led me into the study of occult, spiritual, and mystical teachings. So I'm widely studied in such things as the Gurdjieff Fourth Way teaching, Blavatsky's secret doctrine and theosophy, Sufism, yogic Vedic teachings, Kabbalah, and Judaism. So as well as the Dalai Lama and other kind of mystical teachings. So I've kind of pursued this study of consciousness for 30 years, and I myself even really feel honored to have produced the Heart Doctrine. I think it's a really important book. Not meaning to be boastful, but I think this book is really the most important book on consciousness existent in the world today. A book explaining spiritual science, like what that really entails. Because people, see, the last century of modern education and philosophy and the media, in a way, has deliberately engendered a completely false teaching and developed a form of what I would call quack science. A lot of modern science, or what is presented to people, is quack science.
Yes. Well, you've heard some of my shows where we've discussed consciousness, and of course there are different aspects of it. And for the sake of the listeners, you know, I put myself in the position of the average person. When you say consciousness, they say awake, and the opposite is unconsciousness, asleep. So when I refer to awake in that sense, it's the state of not being asleep, okay? I give it no more importance than that. That's the average person, I truly feel, especially here in this country. And then we have the more esoteric aspect, which I think would be an awareness. And the more conscious an individual would be, the more aware they would be. That's my interpretation. How do you feel about that?
It's very complex defining these basic terms, and people use the word consciousness in such different ways. But to begin, I would say generally, Western views of consciousness have always been dualistic, as though there's only two states, awake or asleep, conscious or unconscious, aware or unaware. So Western psychology has been very dualistic. Okay. Now, according to mystics, say, know thyself. Okay, and that's kind of basic dictum of mystical teachings, is that we have to know ourselves. So then the question becomes, what is this self we are meant to know? And most people think that their self is kind of like a product of the mind, and it's centered in the head, and it's their kind of personality. And in a way, most people identify with the mind and their thoughts. And whereas mystics are saying there's a hidden self that ordinarily people don't realize. And the process of what's called self-realization is defined by one yogi as the dissolution of the false mind into the lotus of the heart. That in a way, the false self, or the persona, or personality, or ego, is centered in the mind, in the head. But the true self, the real I in the human being, is connected to the heart. And that consciousness originates out of the heart. But then from the heart, consciousness spreads through the body, and it's related to blood flow. See, for the last century, modern science, first you had the development of Darwinian evolutionary theory. Even the protocols of the Elders of Zion mentioned the spread of using Darwinian theory to take away people's spiritual belief and denigrate man, that we're just biological organisms that evolve through natural processes. So we've dismissed this idea of the psychology of the soul. But the word psychology actually comes from Greek. Psyche meant soul, and logos means knowledge of something. So the ancient meaning of psychology is the psychology of the soul. But for the past century in modern psychology and philosophy and education, there's been a complete lack of any exploration of the psychology of the soul. Now, the soul is connected to the heart, and that's where consciousness originates. And often when I give talks, I play a little game with people. You can imagine doing this, the listeners might. And I get people, it's called the pointing game. And you kind of ask a person, point to the ceiling, and then point to a wall, point to your left foot, point to your right ear, and then point to yourself. And the vast majority of people point towards their hearts. Now, if you really believe modern science and psychology, people should be pointing their finger at their heads. But hardly anyone ever does that. In a way, people, when they say I, they point towards their heart. And I would say because that's people have unconscious self-knowledge that their real I is within their heart.
Yes.
And this idea and, that... Sorry?
Oh, I was just going to interject that we've been trained to identify with the ego I, which has been placed in the head through imagery and sounds and programming. So,
yeah, and education and the media, all of which creates a completely false consciousness system.
Yes.
In a way, see, everything we're taught in the educational system is a lie. All what we're taught about history, philosophy, religion, current events, it's all completely false. And it even intentionally so, because we see how these corrupted elites have kind of denigrated the whole educational system. So
yes.
What I teach, what I've studied for 30 years, esoteric teachings, spiritual psychology, it's like not studied in universities. People don't have access to it. The elites have not wanted human beings to know the esoteric teachings. They've kept them hidden from people.
Yes. Now, when you use the term occult, and I can sort of visualize some people cringing, especially the staunchly religious people that are taught that occultism is evil. I know some religions that are very evil, Satanism, for example. So, you know, when we're dealing with terms, we're dealing with semantics. But the word occult really means hidden, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It means hidden or esoteric. So, and it's like magic. You have both black magic and white magic. And similarly, you could have white and black occultism. I mean, the elites thrive on black occultism. I mean, at the head of the Illuminati are Kabbalistic Satanists.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you have this whole Luciferian and pagan kind of demonic practices and beliefs. But the elites and Illuminati have wanted publicly to denigrate study in these areas. They even funded, like, PsyCop, Committee for the Investigation of the Claims of the Paranormal, to try to, it's like a disinformation group. And they've repressed this kind of teaching emerging within the educational system while they've intentionally fostered the cultivation of a completely false consciousness system. So in a way, people lose themselves.
Mm-hmm.
See, I would say that when we're born, people's consciousness in a way is still connected to what's called the bliss sheath in the heart, which is described as the size of a small grape, and it's a mass of unemergent light. And this is kind of your eye, in a way, this bliss sheath. And if you as a human being are aware in your bliss sheath, then it's like your whole body is filled with that feeling of blissfulness and enlightenment. And we can all have tastes of this. Okay, so someone who's self-realized is in that kind of permanent state of inner blissfulness.
Yeah, I was going to make that comment that often when I make a discovery in my research or something comes through, an impression, an intuitive moment, if you will, I sense that. And And so do those with whom I share that information. Somehow that's transferred because there's an elevation of consciousness when one or more people arrive at a higher truth, or a truth period, especially when you've been lied to your whole existence. In this realm, I'm saying, you know, this system is so counterproductive. And I often talk about that, as you know, and many of my guests do, as well as yourself, that there are reasons why we are here, and they go beyond the worldly explanations that we're given. And there, you can be discussing any topic, and you can bring that truth out, that there's a deeper, more profound, eternal reason why we're here. And discovering our true nature is just the first step in reaching that consciousness. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. See, I believe we have to attain our souls. And in a way, our souls can be lost. These elites feed off the souls of human beings. And these beings below the surface of our earth and these alien entities and these elites, they feed off the souls of human beings, and they feed these satanic forces through the death. And because when a person dies, a certain energy is lost, the soul energies, and it's consumed. It can pass to the moon, or it can pass into an underworld. In a way, these entities behind this all feed off the souls of human beings.
Now, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, so the aim in life is we want to know ourselves, and that involves this kind of process of awakening and attaining to our souls. See, there is an inner being in the human being. We have to attain our spiritual bodies. See, we can develop what I'd call higher being bodies for the life of the soul, and we have to attain our spiritual body. And yeah. Gurdjieff had an interesting analogy. He compared it to like nuts on the ground around an oak tree. You might imagine there being thousands of nuts. And then, like, how many of those nuts are going to kind of become an oak tree? Well, very few of them. Most of them become fertilizer, he says, and they go back into the ground, possible future generation. So, in a way, human beings are nuts that could become oak trees if we could realize ourselves and fulfill our what's intrinsic to our nature.
Mm-hmm.
So people can lose their souls. And that's what's happening in humankind. Like, humans today, many of them, it's like they're soulless, because these satanic forces operate through hyperspace to possess people's hearts.
Yes, yes. When you tell people this, of course, you're not trying to scare them or disillusion them or disappoint them. In any way, you're not speaking down to people. You're just speaking about the reality of really knowing who you are. Because with this process that you're describing, there comes a knowing. In this awareness, it's an unshakable kind of knowing. Once you reach that level, you really can't lose that unless you go backwards, unless you become an evil individual or you commit evil acts. Against other people. I mean, usually evil has to do with what we do to others. And, as it's being done to us, it's also masking that bridge, or it's severing that connection that we have, that bridge, because really the spirit is in us. It is us. And we're just not aware of it. So this aspect of consciousness is a process of becoming aware to the extent that you can actually put that to use. It becomes part of your experience in life. Would you say that that's sort of a general way?
Absolutely so. we can awaken to this and then live in that, in the state of being awakened in the heart and feeling the spirit within ourselves. That's what we need to attain. I think one way of looking at it, in a way, I would say, see, that there are seven levels of human evolution. It's like an octave. And throughout all the teachings of mystics, the creation is sevenfold. Everything, even creation is in 6 days, and God rests in the seventh. But if you're familiar with the seven chakras.
Yes.
Well, the heart chakra is the central chakra, and the eye is established in the heart. Now, most people's from the heart is controlled by the three lower chakras, and those are associated with the motives of money, sex, and power. And you look around you in the world today, and you look at these elites. Firstly, money. Like, they're so incredibly greedy, and like they're like pigs. Nothing ever fulfills them because they have an emptiness inside their heart. So they always want to acquire being, owning more and more as if it's going to fill their emptiness. But their unspeakable greed of these people on the planet who would own trillions and trillions of dollars while millions of people are starving and such, and they don't care. It's their money and they just want to enslave people more and more. So greed, the root of all evil. So then sex. You just see how many of these people are perverts, pedophiles and perverts. I mean, this is so rampant, you know, all through the CPS in the States and all among the elites, and they are, you know, the prostitution and homosexuality and wife swapping. All this has been deliberately fostered and cultivated by the elites because they wanted people to be as promiscuous and perverted as possible. And this kind of, as people go through these perverted, degenerate type experiences, in a way they lose heart more. They lose themselves further. So money, sex, and then the third is power. And you see people like Kissinger who says, you know, aphrodisiac, you know, is power. Like, it's like there's something, like personally, I don't want to have control over anybody because I want other people to be free and I want to be free myself. But these people, there's some emptiness in them that somehow they gain something out of thinking that they have some kind of power, in a way, which is illusory, and it's something deficit in their character. So their money, sex, and power, and you just see that's how the elites, this whole corrupted system. I mean, we have such a pathological world at the moment. You know, our countries are run by psychopaths, perverts, and pedophiles. The three P's of political life, as I call them. Mm-hmm. So they rule by the three lower chakras. Okay? Now, the first level of awakening is attaining to the consciousness of the heart.
Yes.
And these people, these pedophiles, perverts, and psychopaths, they have no heart. You see, they don't have feeling in their heart. They've lost that sense of the bliss sheath. And many of them are subject to traumatic conditioning as children. Like, it's not simply just all their fault, kind of. They're a product of the abuse and often terrible things that they go through as children that blocks off their natural feeling in the heart.
Yes.
See, most people couldn't do the things they do. Like, you know, imagine the person who just kind of flies an airplane and sprays hundreds of thousands of people with aluminum and giving them diseases and Alzheimer's. And it's a kind of a criminal psychopathic scheme. And then they make money on the pharmaceutical ends, and they're poisoning the people of the United States, they're poisoning the environment, they're poisoning the water. They don't care. They have nothing in their heart. They have no respect for life, they have no love or compassion for other human beings. These people are psychopaths. You see, they're controlled by the money, sex, and power. They never make it to that next level of self-realization, which is this awakening of the heart and being established in the heart.
Yes.
And then the
now, I'm sorry. I thought you had concluded. I was just going to say you could add another P word there, parasite or parasitical, because their system functions as if we were hosts to their parasitical tendencies. They parasitize our work, our creativity, our speech, our actions, our wealth, everything.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Parasitics. Yeah, parasitic. Yeah, that's how they feed off the souls of humankind. They're parasites. Yeah. It's they're empty inside. See, in a way, and they can't fill. See, one very important mystical teaching in Kabbalah is that in the beginning, when you had an infinite being that pervaded all space, for that infinite being to allow finite beings to come into existence, it had to kind of vacate a space, because otherwise everything would be swallowed up in the infinite. So for the infinite to allow a finite being to come into existence, there is what's called the Zimzum contraction. So the infinite God vacates a space. And in Kabbalah and other esoteric teachings, the idea is we have this vacated space in the higher dimensional physics of the human heart. And that's why, in a way, we long again to know God. That's intrinsic to the heart. But some people, there's this emptiness in the heart, and they have this emptiness in the heart, and they can't fill it in any way, and then their hearts become possessed. They lose themselves.
Yes, that really, in the nutshell, describes the whole situation. Now, in the average individual that is, let's say, unconscious, would you say that we could draw a correlation between that level of unconsciousness and a particular frequency or combinations of frequency that are present in that individual, let's say in their physicality or in their mental body, and which would, let's say, for example, that the individual holds the capacity to express itself through the heart, both in receiving and transceiving information of a higher frequency. But because of this programming and all of this control, that pathway is blocked. I notice this when I'm talking to someone who's sick and they're depressed, for instance, and they are also having difficulty with their throat chakra or just between the throat and the third eye, which is the sixth. So we're talking about the fifth and the sixth chakras. And they're also suffering from regular sinus infections or major respiratory problems. In other words, taking someone's freedom of speech away, for example, could cause all kinds of respiratory ailments. And I've seen that. And I sense that it's frequency related, that the frequency of the message and the frequency of the inhibited actions, the removal of free will or the removal of or denial of responsibility on that individual's part because of the programming. It's not that the person wants to be irresponsible. They've been taught to depend on something else. Do you see those frequencies also related? That's a multi-dimensional question I asked you, but I think you understand what I'm getting at.
Well, I'll kind of address different things you say a little bit. I don't usually so much talk in the way of frequency, but in other ways, yes. But just to begin, one thing that's most important, like a person's having trouble in their throat, the word psyche in Greek that meant soul also meant breath. Yeah. And your soul life is related to your breath. In Kabbalah, there are five levels to human existence in different worlds. And each of those is related to a different level of the breath within ourselves. Even in the Bible, God breathes into man a living soul. So a person is ensouled through the breath and the vital energies. So a person has throat problems, like the throat, in a way, is in between your mind in your head and your heart in
yes.
your chest.
Exactly.
So someone who has conflict between what's going on in their mind and they hold all their feelings in will form muscular armoring and blockage in the throat. Now, another thing about people who are depressed, I would say the most valuable thing for people who are depressed is to go into their breath and start. See, most people breathe from their upper chest, and
mm-hmm.
they're blocked. And you say to people, take a deep breath, and everybody puffs up. Okay,
yes.
But really, in a way, to take a deep breath, you want to exhale and kind of breathe into your abdomen.
Yes,
so
the
people
diaphragm.
Who are depressed, they sit and they don't breathe. They don't breathe. They hold their breath, because holding your breath is how you hold in your feelings. If you don't breathe, you don't feel.
Yeah.
And that,
I used to
imitate this with kids when I was a professor for 12 years, and I'd pretend as some person who's upset, like suppose I'm a boy, Daddy, Johnny stole my bicycle and he pushed me down and punched me. And my father says to me, you shut up or I'll give you something to cry about. And then what do? I hold in my feelings. I suck up my breath and I hold my breath. So people who go through traumas, they hold their breath more and more so that they no longer breathe.
Yeah.
They're chronically constricted in their breath, and they can't even breathe into their abdomen or complete breath.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Don?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they do that for two reasons, too, because the inhalation takes in more of the experience, you see? It's not just the exhalation, but it's the inhalation. It's that fear that when you're, and it's subconscious. It's not a mental process that individual is going through. People clam up and tighten their muscles. They become very rigid when they're in a state of fear or even a state of anger. They huff and they may take a deep breath, but like you said, it's usually a sound that's made in the throat. You know, it's a grunt. And if they don't know how to breathe from the diaphragm, which is something that's dealt with most musicians, when I'm teaching someone to play a wind instrument, they have to be breathing correctly. Or someone to sing, they have to be breathing correctly. Even playing the piano or the drums and any instrument, if you stop breathing, you die. So breathing is going to help you, especially when you're moving the body beyond a resting state. But now you're also dealing with the mental aspect, the anguish, the fear and all the other subtleties that occur in that individual. You know, we're not trying to do psychoanalysis on each person here. I don't even like the process, to tell you the truth, but we could certainly get to the root of why a person acts the way they act or feels the way they feel, responds to things the way they do. And denial is a perfect example of a form of unconsciousness surfacing up into the consciousness and being held as the reality. You know, that's what the system has created in people, which is why people won't take responsibility for their actions, and they sit and wait for someone else to do it for them. You know, they become lazy and apathetic because it requires taking that deep breath and using your gut, having some guts, basically. So I just want to say that. If that makes sense, fine. If it doesn't, it didn't come from me.
I think that's really true. And see, most people now, people are sinking into fearfulness and they're kind of just, they distract their attention more and more into just trivia, like ridiculous TV shows and the media and titillation and men playing games with balls, you know, their nations being destroyed, their children are being murdered, their parents are being given Alzheimer's, their water's being poisoned, their nations being robbed, their military's all committed treason on them. You know, the police don't do their job anymore. The police just protect the psychopaths. You got no police services in the U.S. Where's the CIA, FBI? They do nothing for the people of the United States. You know, it's like an insane asylum. And it's a completely false reality of these puppets that you see on TV. And you see that for anyone with any spiritual discernment, you turn on the TV and see these news reporters and you realize they're just big bags of hot air. There's no substance to it. There's no heart. There's no intelligence. They're just pathological liars. It's just all acting. It's like a big soap opera. You know, and we live in this reality that's completely unreal. And most people never get out of that. And they see another thing, you know, people don't have courage. And you know, the word courage comes from French, la cour, meaning heart. Courage,
yeah.
Actually means having a new heart. You see, and that's what people lack. They lack heart. See, that's why I like you, Don. I like your show because you express many of the same sentiments I feel. Like, moral outrage at what's being done. Like, why aren't these people in jail? As true on his show. So we kept asking, why aren't these people in jail? You know, how can our military and our police and our intelligence, how can all of these people betray the American people, betray their country? You know? And because they're blackmailed and all this perversion, it's such degeneracy. And people don't see the first step for many people to awakening is like remorse of conscience. Gurdjieff compares it to the fire, the alchemical fire. Like people need to. Look, we need to experience remorse of conscience for the things are doing and that have done and have allowed to be done in our nations. Like, it's absolutely insane. Like, the American dream became the American nightmare. You know, you've had a CIA that's been a terrorist organization for 50 years, murdering people all around the world and perpetrating injustices and undermining democratic movements in any country in the world, all to acquire the resources of the world for these psychopathic elites. You know, everything we thought about America, it's all been a lie, and the democracy's a lie. You know, there's no democracy. The elites own both parties, and it's all a complete fraud.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it's like you're waking up as a nation and like, oh, God, my God, look what we've done as the United States of America. We've just been responsible for the murder of almost 2 million people in the Middle East. You know, we've used 300,000 times more depleted radioactive material than used in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. You know, we like millions and millions of homeless people. Now we got drones and we can just fly in. You know, coward people who sit at control panels and murder people as though it's like a computer game.
Yes.
You know, it's just so outrageous. It's just so, it's incredible. I would never have imagined such a epic kind of tale. And now we're in this situation. These scumbag people, the scum rise has risen to the tops of the waters of life. You know, we have to skim this scum off. We really do. We have to take back our world, and we have to have courage to do that.
Yes. On last night's show, Christopher, I had Pastor Lindsey Williams, who rubs shoulders with the elite, as he calls them. And I told him, you know, they like to be called elite, but there's nothing that make these people a higher class of people or better than us. In reality, because everything that they've built their empire upon is based on a system of illusions and lies. And, you know, he made a general comment, and I'm not criticizing him. He made a general comment, they've taken God away from the people. Well, have we not allowed that? In other words, they say, okay, you can't pray in school, or you can't use the name of God in school. So therefore, now they've taken God out because they've removed it. I can still feel God in my heart, and I can think about God without verbally expressing my thoughts. But you see, in a sense, it was a bit of an awakening for him to hear me say that, because he's been saying it so much that what was missing, I felt, from the message was, but we do not have to accept that. We don't have to consider that that's a foregone conclusion. They've done the same thing in organized religion, haven't they? They've removed God from there, too. We have a middleman that's going to take us to heaven, you see? We have no relationship with God because we've allowed these people to trick us into their illusory world and their lies. And people, there are many people listening right now, they're saying, well, I haven't done that, but what have you done to undo it? Because that's the game they're playing right now. And you may not live long enough to see it come to 100% fruition across the planet, but your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, if you're lucky even to have generations produced after you leave. What kind of people could consider, a group of 12 people, he said, could have it in their being to consider the deaths of 6.7 billion people on this planet? What kind of creature would contemplate that? There's only one answer for it. And to deny it or pretend like that isn't the situation, that doesn't exist, or that's an impossibility, is also insane. And it's irresponsible. And that's my rant. Go ahead, if you want
to. Well, I mean, I totally agree. These people aren't elites. See, they're degenerate bloodlines. They're degenerate. They're inbred and degenerate. Okay, they think because they're psychopathic that they can take advantage of normal people who have goodness in their hearts and are trusting and care for their fellow other human beings. So these people who think they're elites, like they're little egomaniacs, okay? But inside themselves, they're empty because they have no soul life. They've lost their soul life. So really, they represent those lower levels of human evolution. That's why they haven't wanted other people in the mode of goodness to awaken spiritually. It leaves them behind. They have, because they've lost that within themselves. And I also think that it's very complex, all really what's happening here and what kinds of beings there may be in the underworlds and controlling in these people. I think there's all levels to what's being done here. Like, there's what's on the surface in terms of who the psychopaths are and in terms of the elites and the bankers and the Zionists and the, you know, corrupted churchmen and such. But then there's other level of what goes on below the surface and what other kinds of entities that possess these people and feed on them and such.
Yes. Now,
but they're not elites. They're not elites.
Now, I think we've sufficiently laid the groundwork for discussing some things in your book that you like to bring out. And I've gotten up to... I'm about three quarters of the way through the book. If you
wow, really?
Yes.
And, I mean, it's a heavy book. I mean,
it is. It's not for the weak of heart. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But it will strengthen your heart. I want to encourage people to really look into this. If you want to see how to discover yourself, and not in the typical way, this is not like watching the Dr. Phil show or listening to a Wayne Dwyer seminar, okay? It's ancient truths all assembled, and the wisdom of thousands and thousands of years of existence of people that did have a very high consciousness when they were here on the earth. And I just think you've done a masterful job at connecting all these different aspects of consciousness from all these different realms of the different faiths and in their true sense, not in a political sense. You just dealt with the wisdom in all those different religions, and there's a central theme there, because as one reads this, one starts to sense in his or herself. I can see this happening in people, and I could see it happening in myself, that I fine-tuned certain aspects of my inner self that no one's ever seen before. No one's ever experienced this, even myself. And I consider myself a pretty conscious individual. But I've experienced some growth from this, too. And
I think I was going to say, Don, see, I think you as an individual are centered in your heart. I hear it when you speak. It's just you know this intuitively, but then this book, in a way, shows you that, yes, your intuitions are right. This is, you know, the heart, see, what you're saying is it's an amazing book in that what I say, the esoteric teaching of all the world's religions is the heart doctrine.
Yes.
And this is what's common to Christianity, Judaism, and Kabbalah, the secret doctrine of Blavatsky, the teachings of the Dalai Lama, yogic Vedic teachings. See, all of them elaborate the heart doctrine. But no one in modern times, Christian people never taught anything about the heart doctrine. The teaching, see, the esoteric side of the religions has been lost. That's what's happened. It's denigrated. Like, you look at Christians today in the world. How could they dare call themselves Christians? You know, how can people call themselves Christians? Why aren't the Christians out there on the streets in the millions protesting the mass murdering of other people by your own nation? You know, the Christians, like, there are no Christians. You know, instead, like, look at the Catholic Church. It's the biggest pedophile organization that's existed during the history of humanity. And they're satanic, they do bloodletting, terrible, terrible things. You know, all the religions have kind of been perverted intentionally by the elites. And they've tried to persuade people that religion is the source of conflict between people. But that's a complete delusion. See, because they wanted to undermine religion. That's been their intention. Now, what we really need in the world, we need Muslims and Jews and Christians and Hindus and Native people have the heart doctrine in their teaching. We need the people of the world who still have heart, who still have their souls, that we have to wake up and try to take back our world and put these people where we need to bring their karma about on them. We know their crimes well enough, the crimes of the elites throughout the world. That if we could enforce the anti-terrorist legislation, we'd seize their assets around the world. And it would reduce the debt of every country on earth to zero. Because it's all owed to these people who are guilty of innumerable crimes against humanity. The wars, the chemtrails, the fluoridation of the water, the inoculation of poisons, the quack science they use. The poisoning of the media. Everybody in the media, they're all guilty. They're complicit in accessories after the fact of the mass murder of 9/11. They're accessories to this genocidal agenda. You know, these people, their karma is, white magic is like trying to invoke God to help bring their karma down upon themselves.
Yes. Well,
I mean, in our troubled times, I really believe, as you do, is like we need, in a way, to beseech God to have mercy on us and help us deal with these people and bring their karma down upon themselves. We would have a new age if we could do that, if we took back the wealth of the world. All the troubles of humankind are just being intentionally created by these psychopaths. I mean, it's incredible. We've never known a period of history where we've been free of their criminal activities. We've never known it. All of human history, they've been there, cultivating wars and murdering people all for money, sex, and power. And Luciferian goals. They have this false god, this low god of the underworld.
Yes, I agree with you. Now, I got a message from one of our listeners who's reminding me of my use of the word humanity and or human, and there are several meanings for that word. Hugh sometimes is interpreted as serpent man, but Hugh also is a color as well. So I'm using it in the good sense. I'm not necessarily, and I noticed you used the word too in your last comment.
A human.
Yeah, the word human. You know, the bottom line is they're words, and when you do speak from the heart and you listen with the heart, you get the true meaning of what's being said, and the built-in traps of the English language. I truly recognize that English was created to be a dialectical language that means the opposite of what the words say, and I've done shows on that. And I know others, when I explain my views on that, others are doing the same thing. You know, I have a dear friend, Dr. Mike Castle, who's on the show quite frequently, and he answers his telephone by saying, heaven no.
Heaven no?
Heaven no. Why not? Why do we say hell oh? You know?
Wow.
And wow.
That's very interesting.
It's a good point. You see, we use words that, you know, we're greeting someone honoring the underworld. Really. And the first word when we answer a phone, we've all been trained to say hello when we pick up a telephone. Now, I know some people that just answer, yeah, you know, what does that mean? No, actually, I wanted to say no. You said the wrong word, you know. It's just a way to break out of these patterns. That's the thing, is because as you become more conscious, you realize you don't want to go back to those old feelings and those constructs that were given to us, even forced upon us. You know, as a musician, I strive to do everything I possibly can to be creative in the most natural sense. And I know that if I open my heart up to the creation, to the vibrations of the creation, the music will come in into my heart. And I can create all kinds of music. No particular goal. The music presents itself in a very mysterious way. It's as though when you make that connection, it just arrives. It's like turning on the radio. The waves were always there, you know. The waves of a particular station were being transmitted, but the radio was turned off. And when you open up the heart, it's like turning on that dial. And the more conscious you become, the more that potentiometer, that volume control is raised to take in, you know, to produce more sound. Really, you're talking about amplification there. But in that sense, if one can visualize it, that's what happens as you become more conscious. And the universe will help you in this. You're not alone. You'll realize that feelings of loneliness are totally unnecessary, that you're not alone. In fact, you are connected to more, much, much more and greater things than you are in this repressive system down here. What are your thoughts on that, Christopher?
Well, there's all kinds of things. When you talk about music, here's an interesting fact. From my occult studies, I would say modern science always thinks in dualities. Stimulus, response, action, reaction, matter, energy, observer, observed, left brain, right brain, asleep, awake. They always think dualistically, whereas mystical formula of the universe is that one is divided by 1, 3, 7, and that when God manifests firstly a triune nature and then a sevenfold nature. And this is in the first chapter of Genesis, is hidden in there. Okay, so the idea of the one becomes three, then seven. And it's like white light divided by a three-sided prism, and it gives you seven colors. That's a pattern of creation, according to esoteric teachings. Okay, if you take a piano keyboard, has seven octaves of seven notes. So you have 49 notes, and then you have the 50th. See, the law of seven is hidden in the piano keyboard. It's a model of the structure of the universe. And in the piano keyboard, you have missing semitones between mi and fa and si and do. And that embodies the law of the octave, is how you have these missing semitones. This ancient knowledge about the law of seven and the law of the octave is right on the piano keyboard. And also the law of three. Gurdjieff explains that the piano was designed to pass this ancient knowledge down through music.
Yeah.
And I think when you play, like, when it flows through you, if you're awakened in the heart, like, we are so unlimited. See, another aspect to my book and what I'm arguing is that human beings have zero-point centers connected to the higher dimensions of the human heart, that there's actually a higher dimensional physics to the human heart. We have a zero-point center. In a way, we are free energy devices. Like, people want to, like, how do we tap the zero-point energy? Well, we ourselves are zero-point beings. We have zero-point centers, and we are hooked into that zero-point fields of the quantum vacuum. So the more we awaken in the heart, there's a whole psychology of how we can tap, like, the immensity of energies and potentials and creativity that is unleashed as we open the human heart. Because not only when we awaken in the heart, you can feel illuminated, because within the heart, the self is described as self-illuminating like the sun. See, the sun is self-illuminating. Well, similarly, the self within the heart is self-illuminating. So if you awaken in that, you feel enlightened, because you have all the release of all this light. And you've not only physical light, like interior light, you also feel light. And then that light can then illuminate higher centers. So it can illuminate, it can manifest through the throat chakra, the brow chakra, the crown chakra. So there are these higher faculties we can then acquire. So, so just that was the other idea, that we have these zero-point centers. This is very unusual, this. I don't know anyone in the literature or modern psychology today who conceives that human beings might have zero-point centers. And that's what I say is a human being's eye is your zero-point center, in a way. It's quite complex, as you see from my writing. It's not easy to grasp what I'm trying to convey.
Yeah. Now I want to make a point about what you said about the keyboard and let's say the piano. Actually, a full piano keyboard has 88 keys.
That's it.
So you were maybe referring to a portable, okay? The 49 or the 61 note, even 73 note keyboards, and some 76 in the old Fender Rhodes were slightly larger than these portables, but they were smaller than a full 88 note keyboard. We have the missing semitones occur in the scales, in various scales. For instance, a major scale, which is called a diatonic scale, has the semitones between the third and the fourth steps and the seventh and the octave, or the seventh and the eighth step of the scale.
Yeah.
Step one and step eight are the octaves. In any key, it doesn't matter. Natural minors also have that same arrangement. And anyone that knows anything about the keyboard can just move from C two notes to the left or lower and start the scale on A, going A, B, C, D, E, F, G, A. That is an octave, but the arrangements of the semitones are in different places now, because we have just shifted the starting point and the ending point of that scale. But we do have variations. We have other types of scales of many sorts that use a more restricted pattern of melodies. Oriental music, Asian music, uses pentatonic scales, five-note scales. So they don't even use semitones in those harmonies. Some Indian music is very similar, but also they do have semitones in places. The sitar can bend the string, sort of like a blues guitarist would bend the string. to hit the notes in between so they can simulate semitones when an instrument is not tuned to that. But you are right, the number 7 is there, and also the number 12. And numerologically, that number 12, we have 12 months in a year. We have 7 divided into 365 is 52. So the number 7 divides equally into the number of days in a year. There are 7 days in a week. We have these patterns over and over. And the 12 can also be reduced to a 3, which is representative of the Trinity. So in a sense, we can find correlations to religion or correlations to spirituality, correlations to the makeup of the human physiology, and even that which we can't see with our 5 senses. You see, tapping into this energy allows us to raise our consciousness, raise our vibration to the extent to where we can see the unseen. What has been hidden from us is hidden because we are unnaturally existing in this reality. We are not allowed to be who we were created to be. That is the whole dilemma of man's problem. So I want to encourage people to read your book just because of the awakening that will occur. And I don't know if you realize this, Christopher. I think to some extent you do, but it's as though your words have been encoded with this ability to awaken people. I see that happening. I'm going to prophesy that will happen if people read your book. They will find the answers that have been eluding them their whole lives. They'll find those answers, and they will begin to see and create solutions to changing this world to be the place that it was created to be. I don't know if that sounds like a pipe dream to you, but that's the impression.
No, I agree. This is a profound book. I can even read it myself and be inspired again, because you can read it over and over and feel it and understand it deeper and deeper. And it kind of covers everybody's religion. Like if you're Christian, which my background is Christian, that's an amazing chapter on mystical Christianity, tracing the significance of the heart in Christian teaching and what is said by the mystics about the heart. Like, I have one quote in the Bible, because I draw from Gnostic Christian teachings. And this is Christ from the dialogue of the Savior says, "You, sons of interior knowledge, say then from the heart that you are the perfect day and dwell within the Father, you are the perfect day, my goodness, and that you exist within the Pleroma and the heart of the Father." I'm sorry, I've forgotten the quote a little bit. But if you have this key to understanding this concept of the heart doctrine, it helps you understand your own religion more deeply. What I think has happened, see, people say, I see sometimes, like, I see an Alex Jones movie, and in the movie at one point, he kind of flashes a copy of The Secret Doctrine by Blavatsky on, and the kind of implication is, oh, Blavatsky was an occultist, and Kabbalists are all occultists, and they're evil, and that many people think that someone who studies the things I study, like Blavatsky, Crowley, the occult, they think there's something evil to that. But see, we've been disempowered because the elites don't want us to know what the secret doctrine says. They've kept it out of universities for the past century. You know, Manly yeah. Hall said of the secret doctrine, he says, it is undoubtedly the magnus opus of the literature of the modern world. But there's not one university in the world where you can study it. See, they've kept it out. They haven't wanted people. They've hidden all the Gnostic Christian teachings to you and given you distorted forms of what Christianity is.
Yeah.
You see, there's so much that they've robbed us of, our own history and understanding of our own religions.
Yes, I agree with you. Christopher, we've run out of time. I want to give you the opportunity to tell people your website address, how they can locate you on the internet, and how they can get a copy of your book. I'm presuming they can go to zeropoint.ca to do that, but I'll allow you to share all that information.
Okay, thanks, Don. It's www.zeropoint, spelt out in letters, .ca. And the easiest way, my book is available through Amazon, and I have a link from my website, or you can just go to Amazon, put in the Heart Doctrine and my name, and it'll pop up. I think this is, we as spirit, you began today, Don, saying about spiritual warfare. And I think in a way, we need to be further armed with spiritual knowledge. And I think this is a profoundly valuable book, which in a way, you know, I feel graced to have produced something like this. Honored in a way to have done it, and in a way, as have you ever heard of a book called Illuminati, the cult that hijacked the world?
Yes.
It's an absolutely amazing book, and so many things he says in there, and one of the things he says is, nothing would disturb the Illuminati more than a revival of belief in God. Now, see, in a way, the belief in God has to do with the issue of the whether a human being has a spiritual or soul nature, and that relates to the issue of human consciousness. What I, in this book, what you realize is that there's this whole advanced science of human consciousness and the soul. These teachings have been hidden in our religions, and no one's kind of realized the significance of it. And so for that reason, I think this we need the Heart Doctrine teaching could help unite the people of the world to oppose what we're facing in these end times.
Yes. You know, the King James Version of the Bible was ordered to be edited by a pedophile and a murderer, and it was tailored to hide those transgressions. And I'm speaking about King James. One can do the research for themselves and uncover that information. Well, Christopher, unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank you for your insight and for having written this book. And as I promised, when I'm finished reading it, the moment I'm finished, I'm going to write up a review for my
own. Oh, thank you, Don. Wow.
Post it on my website on the books page with all the contact information and links to it. And I want to thank you for being on tonight's show and let folks know that you'll be visiting Evident Footprints again on the 20th of May. That's 2 weeks from today, Thursday. So thank you so much, and thank you for being a devoted listener to Evident Footprints, too.
Yeah, thank you, Don. Thank you for your bravery and the research you do. You have heart. You know, we have to come together and be brave in the face of this. Thank you so much. Thanks, BBS.
Well, thank you, and you have a good night yourself. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and tonight's special guest, Christopher P. Holmes, Ph.D. Again, the name of the book, The Heart Doctrine. And just Google that. Go to amazon.com to pick that up. Okay? Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com for broadcasting this show, as well as Seth Hendrick on the sound at BBS Radio, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when our guest will be scientist inventor Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.